How can I future-proof myself to have a better menopause experience?
Really focusing on your microbiome through your 30s and your 40s, you know, again, likely is to give you a better baseline. They actually had about a four-year delay in the natural menopause. Mm.
This one is from Alice, who says, dear Naomi and Megan, I haven't started menopause yet, but my mum had a terrible experience with digestion problems and gut health. As somebody in my 30s now, how can I future-proof myself to have a better menopause experience?
Ooh, that is a very, very good one. So there has been observational studies where they've showed, I think this one study I'm referring to is in like 900 people, and they showed that women who had regular oily fish, in fact, I think it was like 90 grams of oily fish on the daily, and one serve of legumes, so things like the butter beans, lentils, those sorts of things, soybeans, they actually had about a four-year delay in the natural menopause. Mm. So it looks like potentially, again, that was an observational study, so we can't always say causal, but it looks like actually what we're eating might, you know, have a role in and what age we go through the menopause. Mm. And then, of course, we know, again, through a lot of the studies that when we go through menopause, the microbial diversity takes a dive, right? And yes, there are things like we said we can't control, like, you know, the changes in the estrogen, progesterone and those mechanisms. But having a good baseline, so really focusing on your microbiome through your 30s and your 40s, you know, again, likely is to give you a better baseline. So when you have that decline, it won't be as sharp potentially.
Interesting. It's, I mean, there's just so much we don't know, isn't there?
It really, And I think it comes down to a lot of these areas haven't been funded adequately. I mean, the stuff that you're doing, I think, is really bringing light to menopause, which is so incredible, because it's then, it is making funders and the government be like, oh, we should fund this. Like, so the louder you scream, the more research it's done. So it's, you're doing a lot of good, essentially.
Oh, thank you. But there's a lot of morbidity associated with menopause. And sometimes it's just literally that nobody's recognising it as menopause. But, I mean, sometimes even if you have a recognised menopause, you know, for women that can't take HRT or they don't want to take HRT or for whatever reason, it's still just because it's not a sexy subject. It's not something that grabs people's attentions and makes them think, oh, I must fund that in a way that other areas of medicine are.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that women are not suffering because of it.
I know. I mean, it's there's so many, we could talk about this all day, but also, you know, it's a case of prevention as well, like with medicine. And I think that's what's frustrating. It's always focused on treatment. But actually, if we looked at a lot of these studies and how we can prevent really bad symptoms, I'm sure we could save the NHS millions of pounds, right? Just that mindset needs to change, isn't it? The reactive approach.
What are your thoughts on using protein as a high dose protein as a method of laying down high amounts of muscle?
So I think we just need to be a little bit cautious of where we're getting our protein from and what we're excluding. Because if we're having so much of our calories, like, you know, 50% of our calories from protein, that probably means our fiber is taking a dive. And in fact, one of the elements I looked at in my PhD was looking at this protein fiber index, where it was a ratio between the two that was mostly impacting the microbiome. So if you wanted to have more protein, you just need to have more fiber to kind of counteract that. Because if you're having loads of protein, that can essentially overwhelm your small intestine, so the upper part's ability to absorb that protein for it to get from your gut into your blood, right?
Right.
And, you know, to build your muscles, we kind of then dump more protein in our large intestine when the bacteria ferment it. And when bacteria ferment protein, they produce potentially, you know, not very good chemicals. So if you have more fiber in there, then actually the microbes have more fiber to ferment and might counteract some of that effect.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I see it often where, you know, women in particular, you know, going through menopause are told to have more protein. Yeah. And they go, oh, I'm just going to have protein shakes. And I say, if that's what you want to do for convenience, go for it. But I would ideally prefer you to have it from whole food, because you're also going to get the fibers in there to get your fiber index better. And you're going to have the phytonutrients and all these other things, which we know can have additional benefits. But if you are wanting to go down the protein supplement route, I would say try get one without any of these extra additives, especially no sweeteners. Things like xylitol and sorbitol are often found in these, and they actually are common bloating triggers.
Right, okay.
So particularly, you know, going through menopause and you're like trying to have in this protein check and it's actually contributing to the bloating. So being cautious of the additives that are added into it.
And what about creatine?
Yeah, so I mean, the truth is that there is good evidence for creatine in exercise performance. Creatine is similar to a protein, not exactly the same as the protein, but we do know it helps, you know, with sports performance. There's also some...
And does it help with sports performance?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. So there's some decent systematic review showing that. In terms of like mental health, there's some kind of emerging research in that space. I would say I'm not convinced yet, so we need more data there.
One of the things that we are seeing kind of more of is women with histamine sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get bowel symptoms, they get rashes, they get mood symptoms. I mean, it's a very kind of multi-organ symptom situation. I think fermented foods for them is a bit tricky, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
Yeah. Because that's what the microbes actually producing. And I think histamine intolerance is just generally a really tricky one, right? Because we know our microbes in our gut produce histamine as well as, you know, strawberries in the summer could have different levels of histamines compared to winter. So actually when we're advising on, you know, following a lower histamine diet, it can be quite tricky. So definitely if you are struggling with a histamine intolerance, I would lay off those fermented foods for sure.